And with us right now is Susan Combs. Susan, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Barry.
Susan is from King City originally, but now she's from New York City. That's quite a change. Tell us about the change.
So I've been in New York City for about 20 years now, a little over 20 years. I actually went right after I graduated from the University of Missouri and went out there to be a banquet manager. And then the stars didn't align that way. 2 weeks before my job, they dissolved it because they said two banquet managers at the Marriott at the World Trade Center instead of three. So pick from Detroit or New Orleans. And I didn't want to do either of those. So I went out and just kind of made my own way anyway.
So you actually ended up starting your own business.
Yes. So in 2005, I started my own insurance brokerage firm at 26. So we're getting ready to celebrate, I guess, our 17th year. it's been great.
So that seems like a daunting task, starting your own business, insurance brokerage. I mean, this is, what did you study in college?
Not insurance. So my degree is actually hotel and restaurant management, which I've always quantified that as a glorified business degree with some cooking classes. So I had the marketing and the management and the accounting and all that stuff helpful to run a business. So, when I started the company, I had a really good mentor that pushed me and said, why not? Why not start this on your own? You can do it. You have the connections. Let's just, you know, go for it. And so I did.
Okay. So you ran a successful insurance brokerage and against odds. I mean, starting a new business is really a tough thing to do, but you were able to do it. And so not being satisfied with just running a successful business, you decided to be an author. How did that come about?
Well, I think, with writing the book, I mean, it really kind of started as a legacy piece to my father. My father was head of intel at Rosecrans Field for a number of years, and he ultimately retired as a two-star general in the Air Force in Washington, D.C., and we started this whole legacy piece called Pancakes for Roger. And that was to be a tribute to him. He ultimately passed away of Agent Orange-related throat cancer. And one day he requested some pancakes when he had a feeding tube and a DNR, and I knew that that just wasn't in the cards for him. So after he passed, the month of February, we've worked with the University of Missouri Law School Veterans Clinic. And for every pancake-loving picture we get in February with the hashtag Pancakes for Roger, we make a donation to the clinic. So that's how the whole Pancakes for Roger started. And I've had people that have been after me to write a book for a while, and I just figured, you know, why not now? It seemed like the right time.
Okay, so you had these people asking you to write a book, urging you to write a book. What was it that they saw that urged them to urge you?
So I do quite a bit of public speaking, and when I've ended my talks, I always end them with unsolicited advice, and they're kind of quotes and anecdotes from mentors that I've had along the way, and I've always thought that would be kind of a cool premise for a book, to do like a chapter with the quote and then just expand on that person. And so I had people that were just saying, you should really turn this into a book. You should really turn this into a book. And so to be honest, my business partner, she has a successful podcast. My husband has a YouTube channel interview. And I said, you know what? Why don't I have a creative outlet? So that's when I decided. I've had several friends that have written books, and I don't make decisions lightly. So I did my research, talked to my friends that were authors, and it just seemed like it could fit into my schedule at the time.
And you knew from the start what you wanted to write about.
Yes and no. I would say that when I started, I really thought my father was just going to be one chapter. I thought he was just going to be classed as one of the mentors. And then when I got to going with writing the book, my father is the pages that the words are written upon, and he is throughout the entire book. So when it came time to putting everything together, I do have, like I said, several mentors that are featured throughout the book, but my dad is in every single chapter. So that's why the title of Pancakes for Roger, A Mentorship Guide for Slaying Dragons, just seemed like it was going to be appropriate to honor him in that way.
Talk about slaying dragons.
So I fought for that title. We started out and we said, okay, it was going to be a mentorship guide for life. And then at 2 a.m. one morning, I popped up awake and I said, no, mentorship guide for slaying dragons. I mean, when you think about it, we all have dragons to slay. We've all been on our own journeys. Maybe it's, maybe it's difficulties in personal relationships. Maybe it's difficulties with education or jobs or family. There's always obstacles that we have to to overcome. And so that's kind of my thought about slaying dragons.
You also talk about favorite sayings that many of them came down from your father. And I was thinking, when I was looking through some of those, that they're almost like proverbs. Hmm. Did it ever occur to you that that's kind of what you were looking at there? These are lessons for life, really.
Yeah, I didn't, but I think my dad would be smiling down to hear you say that. That's pretty cool.
So what are some of those?
So I would say some of my favorite ones. I work a lot as an expert witness now on the Affordable Care Act throughout the country. And so since I've been involved in a lot of litigations, one of the things my father taught me early on was it's important for you to be understood, but more important for you not to be misunderstood. And that's been something that it's been kind of cool because I've shared that with a lot of attorneys and they kind of give it back to me sometimes. And I say, oh, where'd you hear that? I don't know. But that's the concept of that is pretty simple because my dad always taught me that if you talk in jargon and acronyms, then a lot of times you can just confuse people. And so if you just talk in plain speech and things that people can understand easily, you can get your point across a lot better.
That's that old KISS principle.
Yes, keep it simple, stupid. Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What are some of the others?
So I would say another one of my favorite ones is drive the car. And as pretty much everybody knows in this geographic area, I had to explain it in New York City, but a lot of us country kids are driving at a very young age prior to having our driver's license if you grew up around a farm or on a farm. But when it came to highway driving, my dad would always just, no matter what, he was like, drive the car. He said, you know, you could be the best driver in the world, but you have to worry about the people around you. You could go off the road, you can pop over a hill, and there could be a cow, there could be a horse. I mean, and you just have to remember to always drive the car. So a lot of that is just keeping things simple again. And just life can be overwhelming. And sometimes you can have a task that you need to accomplish and it just seems just so big. And when you break it down into bite size and you just keep things simple and remember to drive the car, things can just work out right.
I heard somebody say once, you can move a mountain one piece of gravel at a time.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think everybody has faced this in their career or even in their personal life. This is too big a job for me to do. I can't handle this. I'm not even going to try. You just give up before you start. Yep. Instead of taking just that one step.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and one of my favorite quotes by Marcus Aurelius is, be active in your own rescue. And I think about that a lot. And because I think sometimes when you do get overwhelmed, you can stand in the middle of the room and say, why me? Or who's going to save me? And sometimes you just have to, like you said, take the first step and find that you have the power within yourself to accomplish what you need to do.
Mm-hmm. Any other of those sayings stand out to you?
I'd say one of the other things that probably stands out is Dr. Ann Deaton. She's the wife of Brady Deaton, who is the former chancellor of the University of Missouri. And they've both mentored me for the past several years. And when I was tapped to become the national president of Women Insurance and Financial Services, that was a very big thing to me. And I have a good gut check for a lot of quick decisions, but if it's something that's going to impact other people, I always do my research and ask for people to kind of guide me. And the thing she told me is, Susan, you always have to have a stretch in your life. You have to have something that seems bigger than you. Because if you don't have a stretch, you just cease to exist. So when you have those challenges and things that seem too big, that's really where you grow as a person. So that's something that I've always tried to remember. Every time I feel uncomfortable, you know that you're growing.
Okay, I wonder if that kind of fits in with the idea of lifelong learning. Is it the same kind of thing?
I think so. I mean, you know, I think that we're always students in life and there's always things that you can be learning. There's always things that you can do. I mean, I had a friend that told me one time, you know, every single day you're getting better or worse. And so, you know, you just have to take steps and take strides so that you can be the best version of yourself too.
One of the things I was kind of touched about was your references to grief and handling grief and growing through that process. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I was extremely close to my father very much type A people. And, you know, I think that writing the book was very cathartic for me and very healing. I mean, I ugly cried every single week when I was going through the writing process, because I just I really wanted to get it right. I wanted to honor him. And I think a lot of times with grief, it'll just hit you. I mean, it's, you know, I'm a member of the Dead Dads Club. It's a club that you don't know about until you're in it. And it's a club you never want to join, no matter how old you are. And so I think with grief, a lot of things that I've learned is that sometimes to get through it, you need to help somebody else. And so if you can help somebody else, that just helps with your healing and also pays homage and gives tribute to the legacy of the person that you've lost as well.
Your father must have been a remarkable, remarkable man.
Yeah, he was.
What was it about him that it was it his joy of life, his integrity, his honesty, his fairness? What was it about him?
I think it's all of the above, right? I think my dad, I mean, I knew my dad was a good guy. I knew I had a wonderful father, and I will say that I know not everybody has a wonderful father. And so I know I was very fortunate. But after he passed, the people that reached out and just gave stories about things that my dad had done for them. There was somebody that shared that when she was a child, my dad was her guardian ad litem, because my father was also a civilian judge in Gentry County as well. And she said, "Your dad made me feel safe when nobody else would," and helped her with, making this decision on what was going to be the best for her for custody. I was recently interviewed on Veterans Radio, and then a gentleman emailed me afterwards and said, "Oh, I just really enjoyed listening to this." He said, "I met your father when I was an F-16 pilot right out of training." And he said, "The advice your dad gave me was there's rocks in the clouds." And he said, because when you're a pilot and you're flying, he said, a lot of times you just don't know what's on the other side. And he said, "I ended up becoming a flight instructor." And he said, "Every single class that I taught after that all learned that there are rocks in the clouds." So I thought it was really cool that he took the time to let me know that story as well.
When you hear stories like that about how your father touched other people, what goes through your mind?
Oh, it makes me happy. It just, I think it's changed me as a person. And what I mean by that is I know how it makes me feel. So if I know somebody's lost somebody, I try to, if I have a story about their parent or their sibling or, their child, I try to share that with them because I know how much it means. Because I think sometimes after you lose somebody, my family, we call it the ugly third grader. You don't know. I think before I lost my dad, when somebody would say, "Oh, I had a loss" or something, you would say the platitudes that you're supposed to say, "Oh, I'm so sorry for your loss. I hope you're okay." But until you've really experienced it, I don't think you can truly gain empathy. So by having that newfound empathy, I think you really see people that are going through those struggles too.
Do you think there's any way to get through grief without just meeting it head on? It sounds like you faced it right from the start, and you didn't like run from the memories, you ran into the memories.
I think everybody's different. I mean, I see that within my family. We're all very much different personalities, and I process things a lot like my father. I'm a person that's never really been prone to depression. It's kind of move a muscle, change a thought. My dad was one of those guys that if he was having a bad day, he'd go out on the farm, he'd chop wood, he'd change his situation. And so that's something that that's just been instilled in me. So I remember the day after my father relapsed, and we knew this was kind of the beginning of the end for him. I had to speak at a conference, and that was the only time I just didn't want to get out of bed, but I had to show up for other people, and I showed up, and that's what my dad would have done. And so I think that, like I said, everybody processes things differently. And so you have to find out what works for you. I mean, sometimes people just need to internalize things. Sometimes people need to connect with a bereavement group that's going to give them help. It just depends on what's going to be the best thing. You got to, choose your own adventure in your life.
It makes me think of Viktor Frankl. Viktor Frankl was a Holocaust survivor, mm-hmm. And made it out to become a famous psychologist. One of the things he said that stuck with me is that you can't control your circumstances, but you can control how you react mm-hmm. to them. Mm-hmm. Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, well, it's the serenity prayer, right? You know, the things that you can control and the things you can't. And so, you know, I have friends that have mentored me that, you know, we can all be very reactionary people. And so I think sometimes we, if we can be reactionary, we have to have those people in our lives that can check us and be our tone checkers from time to time when we need to pull them in as well.
We're talking with Susan Combs, who's from King City, now living in New York City. She wrote a book called Pancakes for Roger, a tribute to her father. And what was the subtitle again about dragon slaying?
Yes, A Mentorship Guide for Slaying Dragons.
Okay, so we'll talk more about the book just ahead. Tell us about the title, Pancakes for Roger. How'd that come about?
So as I said previously, my father ultimately passed away from Agent Orange-related throat cancer. And prior to his passing, for the last year of his life, he had a feeding tube, and he was also on oxygen. And if anybody's dealt with people on feeding tubes and oxygen, you know that the feeding tube is how they get their nourishment, and that's the option of getting their nourishment. And if you dealt with somebody on oxygen, when their oxygen levels can go low, they can have a lot of confusion. And so since my father and I were the type A people, we had our set schedule. I'd get up at 5 a.m., I'd check on him, I'd go to the gym, come back, shower, and then get him going for the day. And one morning I was coming downstairs from taking a shower, and he was setting the table. And I looked at him and I said, what are you doing, Dad? And he said, well, I'm going to have pancakes for breakfast. And, oh, man, it broke my heart, because this is a man that never asked for any, I mean, he knew I have a feeding tube. This is how things are. So I knew his oxygen level had gotten low and he had some confusion that morning. And I said, oh, Dad, I said, you know, you have a feeding tube and we have a DNR. And I said, if we do pancakes and you choke, I said, we're done here. And I said, I don't think we're ready to be done yet. And he said, oh yes, I can. He said, my brother Matt's a nurse here in St. Joe. And Matt wasn't there that morning. And my dad said, well, Matt said I could. And I knew he hadn't. So I knew he was confused. And I said, well, let me see what I can do. So I took his feeding tube formula in the little Pyrex pitcher and I put it in the microwave for 14 seconds, not 13, not 15. My dad always wanted to heat it up for 14 seconds. And so I brought it over to the table and I put it on the table and he said, what's that? And I said, well, that's your syrup. And his oxygen levels had started rallying and he kind of smiled and nodded. And, you know, so I shared that story a lot with people because, you know, the one thing my dad wanted, I couldn't give him. And it was such a little request. And so that's how the whole Pancakes for Roger campaign and movement got started, because it's just the little things in life that end up becoming the big things. So when I got back to New York after my father passed, I took one day off work. And my husband said to me, he said, let's go have some pancakes for your dad. So we took the first picture. I put it on social media and told people, if you're so inclined, go have some pancakes for Roger today. And so that's where it kind of started. And then his birthday is February 22nd. So that's when the book came out, was 2/22/22 this year, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
And so we started doing a campaign for the Veterans Clinic at the University of Missouri. And that's how the whole movement got started with Pancakes for Roger. So that's where the whole story behind that comes from.
Okay, well, that's a great story. And let's talk a little bit about the book itself mm-hmm. and about just the nuts and bolts of it's been published. Where can we buy it? And you are going to be distributing parts of the proceeds to charity. Tell us about that.
So the book is available on Amazon. We have hardback, softback, and Kindle versions. And part of the proceeds are going to be going to the University of Missouri Law School Veterans Clinic. And the clinic actually provides free legal services to our veterans navigating the VA claims and appeals process. So I actually was lucky enough to be with the students of the Veterans Clinic earlier this week and get to hear about some of the cases that they're working on. And these kids are incredible. So this clinic is just training these ambassadors for our veterans. And the University of Missouri and Syracuse are notated with having the kind of the largest and the kind of the quote unquote best veterans clinics. But there's a lot of universities that have veterans clinics. So if people are looking to get involved that way, or if you have a veteran that's having trouble with the VA system, dealing with it firsthand, I know it can be rough for my father. Check out a university and see if they have at their law school veterans clinic. They can provide some assistance there.
Some of the stories about veterans and what they've overcome, not only in when they were in the service, but then coming out of it and dealing with the aftermath of it are just awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think with, you know, my father had a VA claim, and it took 3 years. And we thought that was horrible. I mean, my dad was a general. He was a judge. You know, he knew the right people. He knew how to write the legal jargon. And it took 3 years. And then when I started working with the Veterans Clinic, they showed me how on the VA website, it says that all claims on average take 7 years. And 1 out of 14 veterans pass away during this process. So a lot of times it's just, man, it's sometimes it's just the doctor that's administering the care and writing up the report. And sometimes it's just a little nuances that you don't know. And I'll tell you, it's complex. It is complex. And so sometimes you just don't know what you don't know. And so you don't have to have gone to the University of Missouri Law School. You just have to find them. And so if there's any veterans out there, they actually have a program called Tigers for Troops that they do in rural Missouri. So they have these students that go out and they'll do kind of like lunch and learn, so to speak, where they'll sit down with veterans and talk to them. And they have veterans that'll bring in their files and say, here's where I'm at. This is what I'm having trouble with. And then these students, and they have attorneys that are admitted to the Supreme Court as well, will work with them on their claim as well.
One of the things you write about in the book is what you call the three facets of life. What are they?
That was some good advice from my dad. My dad always said, you have the thing that you do for a living, the person that you're with, and the place that you live. And he said, if you can line up 3 out of 3, you're living a golden life. If you can line up 2 out of 3, you're doing all right. But if you have one that you're happy with or none that you're happy with, you got to get off your butt and do something about it. So, you know, that's been one of those things that I always tell people. I mean, you got to look at, you know, you can have a career that you absolutely love, but you could have a horrible marriage. And you could hate the town you live in. And so work can only take you so far. So just kind of having those three things in check, if you can kind of keep your finger on the pulse, then you can kind of navigate the waters.
You know, there's a lot of truth in that when I think about that. If you're 3 for 3...
kind of got it.
You kind of got it. You know, and you mentioned earlier that you're not inclined to depression. You're more of a positive type person. And I realize that there are people who, through no fault of their own, because of chemical imbalances or whatever, suffer from depression. Those of us who don't suffer from it wish that there was a way we could help those who do find hope. Mm-hmm. It boils down to hope, I believe. Either you have it or you don't. What can you do to give hope to somebody who doesn't have it?
Well, I mean, when my dad relapsed the first time after being sick for 10 years, I'm a very big motivational quote person, pictorial quote person. And so I used to send him quotes. And you saying that just reminded me of one of the quotes that I sent him, that hope is the only thing greater than fear. And so sometimes hope is all you got. And I think putting yourself out there, asking for help when you need help, there's a lot of services that can be provided. And then just connecting with other people that are in the same boat. I mean, my book talks a lot about mentorship, and I think some of the most beneficial mentors I've had are my peer-to-peer mentors that have that shared experience as well.
We have less than 30 seconds left. Tell us about the party coming up.
King City, Missouri, at the Rusty Coffee Pot in on Main Street. So from 3 to 5 p.m. On Friday, March 4th.
Susan, thanks a lot for coming in and talking with us. We really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Barry.